It's the weekend, which means it's time for Jill on Money, the show that makes money fun and just happens to answer all your financial questions. Here's your host, Jill Schlesinger.
Welcome back. It's hour number two of Jill on Money, and we have a couple of very special guests in the studio today. We have a first for the Jill on Money show. The laughter is from Kelly Peeler, the founder and CEO of Next Gen Vest. We'll get to her in a second. But Kelly, you're here with your new child.
Yes.
Congratulations. Mazel tov on Otis. We'll definitely have to put a picture of Otis up in the show notes. Otis is a 2-month-old Yorkshire Terrier.
Yes.
And he's
the cutest.
He is so cute, and I can't stand it. I was holding him for a while, but then I let him go be with mommy. And we were just talking before we started, and I said it's just amazing that an animal can really sort of be the natural antidepressant and a really good way to get out of your day-to-day routine, right?
Yeah. With Otis, I go outside 3 times a day now. At a minimum, and I never would leave my office before, so it's just nice to like literally see sunlight.
and of course, let me say a little bit about Kelly because she's a real deal. Next Gen Vest is a really awesome organization. We've had Kelly on the show before. She basically helps students navigate the college process in general, soup to nuts.
College financing. Yep.
College financing. But also you talk a lot about, like, the site, on nextgenvest.com, you can also read blogs about picking majors and understanding.
Absolutely.
So I think it's almost like beyond the financing. It starts with the financing, but everything else gets rolled in.
Yeah.
Explain what Next Gen Vest does in terms of the connection of a potential student to a money mentor and how that works.
Sure. So we say we're the money mentor for every student. And what we mean by that is we're kind of like your personal financial assistant through the whole college process and paying for college process. So we work from students in high school, starting junior year of high school, all the way into to and through college, pretty much helping with any money decision. And we do that all over text message. So which I say is relevant because if you've talked to a teenager, anytime soon and tried to call them, your message will go straight to voicemail. Most teens do not like talking on the phone. They don't even like kind of browsing the internet anymore. They actually just like immediate messaging communication. And so our medium is really relevant for them. It's super convenient and it's available 24/7.
And we are talking to Kelly on this particular weekend because October 1st, ding, 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 is a very important date. And it used to have no relevance except that it was just, you know, the beginning of Halloween month.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Now it is a big deal, right?
Yes. That's when the FAFSA is released, which is the free application for federal student aid. Why that is relevant? It's kind of like the holy grail document for getting anything from free federal aid from the government in the form of Pell Grants to scholarships that you might be awarded by an actual university.
And why is the FAFSA form such a pain in the neck?
It is a huge pain. It's a huge pain because it requires basically all of your financial history. So you have to submit your tax forms, you have to submit bank statements, kind of everything associated with your financial identity for your family needs to be submitted. And a lot of people don't do that. So they end up, because it's a lot of forms, it's a lot of submitting, people lose their passwords, just like with any form. It's a little bit on par of just as bad as filing your taxes, I would say. And because people don't fill out that form, they leave about $2.7 billion of free federal aid unclaimed every year, which is pretty devastating because a lot of students will end up taking out more loans than they actually need to because they literally did not fill out the FAFSA.
Okay, so let me get back to the FAFSA for 1 second because then I want to go into that money that's left and what happens. The FAFSA situation last year seemed to get very convoluted because of tax fraud from the IRS.
Yep.
And there was a tool that was available that helped, that allowed, it was a little bit, seemed a little bit easier, where you could upload your tax returns from the previous year. Is it turned on or turned off right now?
It will be turned on come October 1st. I mean, that's what they're saying. So that's what the Department of Education is saying. But you're absolutely right. So the IRS retrieval tool was meant so that you could basically carry over tax forms and easily upload them, so that you, when you submit your FAFSA every year, you essentially have a record of that information. Because as you can imagine, a lot of people, you know, have their tax forms under their bed with their, you know, their ex-husband, you know, all over the place, and it's hard to organize. So the IRS retrieval tool was meant to make that easier. Of course, last spring, it ended up being switched off or not accessible to a lot of people because of data security issues.
Yeah, that was really fun because I had already talked all about how great it was. And people called in and they're like, what happened to it? And I didn't know what. So what is the College Board's CSS financial aid profile?
Sure. So the CSS profile is, you can kind of think about that as the second core document that you need to fill out as you're thinking about applying to colleges. And mind you, there's all these different forms for applying to college, the common application, all the essays, the personal statements, and then there's all the financial forms that you have to fill in parallel to that, which is really important because there's basically two different portals that you need to be going to. And so the CSS profile, after you fill the FAFSA, depending on the colleges that you're thinking of applying to, some of them require a CSS profile. And the logic behind that is really for a university to get an even more granular viewpoint on your family's financial picture.
By not completing both forms, is there some potential for not getting money? Or is it like, you know, you're doing your best to get them to do the FAFSA? I mean, do they have to do the second form or not?
They don't necessarily have to, but it depends on what college you're interested in going to. We recommend doing both of them. And one of the things that we're really proud about is helping increase FAFSA completion rates. Last year, we helped students access $39 million of free federal aid just by helping them and supporting them through the FAFSA process. A lot of students don't even honestly know that the CSS exists and that a particular university might require it. And so we do that all for them. We say, okay, give us your list of colleges. We'll go tell you which ones require the CSS profile.
We are talking to Kelly Peeler. She is the founder and CEO of NextGenVest, but really more importantly, she is the mother of Otis. and Otis is being just an absolute delight, our two-month-old Yorkie. When we return with Kelly, I want to understand how it is possible that colleges are giving information to students where it's very confusing. It's hard to understand what is a loan, what is a grant, what does that mean, how is this all packaged up, and why there is not a uniform way of understanding that. Or I shouldn't say,
well, maybe we're working on it.
and also, you know, why it is that there's so much confusion, because they're just not willing to say what it is, right?
Absolutely.
And so when we return, we're going to do that. You are listening to Jill on Money. Our phone number here is 855-411-JILL. And you can email us, askjill@jillonmoney.com. The other thing you can do is you can go to nextgenvest.com and find out about the Money Mentors. And, you know, they're going to help you the process for applying for college and getting aid a lot easier. Is this text still the right number?
Yep,
or not?
Absolutely.
Okay, just text 646-798-1745. I want help paying for college. How about that? Let's do that. When we return, more of our interview with Kelly Peeler and Otis. We'll be right back.
Young, old, it doesn't matter. She's here to help you. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger. Can you believe it?
I want no man. You're back with Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of all things music. We are joined by Kelly Peeler. She's the founder and CEO of NextGenVest. You know, the problem is that when you get to know people really well, or at least better, I don't know you really well, but I've interviewed you a few times, and I'm now comfortable enough knowing what your pain point is. And so when Kelly first came on the program, what couldn't she? Oh, I remember. You couldn't get Bruce Springsteen, yeah. And you're from New Jersey.
Yeah, shameful.
So Mark says, let's see if Kelly can get this one. And I'm not sure she can.
No. Nope.
I'm guessing it's the Rolling Stones because it sounds just like the Rolling Stones. But I feel like we need to give you some rock and roll boot camp.
Yeah, I that's not something that I've improved on, and I'm still very ashamed about it.
Oh, don't be ashamed. Kelly is the founder and CEO of Next Gen Vest. And what that company does is essentially will make your pathway to the college financial aid, grant, scholarship, and all of college life process a lot easier to understand. And before we went to the break, we talked about why you're here, which is FAFSA forms are available October 1st. Please, please, please be sure to complete it. $2.7 billion left on the table, which is ridiculous.
Yep.
But what is also ridiculous is that many of our college applicants are receiving letters, and those letters are confusing. What a grant and scholarship, right, and aid. And so is there a uniform way that colleges are supposed to be reporting this, these options and financing options to you?
Honestly, no.
I mean, that's it's ridiculous.
There's no, so really quickly what we do is we help students navigate the student loan and college financing process all over text message 24/7. So we're available nights and weekends when pretty much no one else is. And you get connected with a real human who can guide you through all these really confusing forms and actually help you come up with things like a student loan repayment plan and an actual process to make sure that you're knowledgeable. And mind you, we're dealing with 18 to 24 year old students. So saying things like interest rate is intimidating. Our whole goal is to really demystify that and make it accessible and hyper convenient for a student. So yes, the standardization of forms is completely non-existent for your financial aid package. So I say, I just put that in comparison to how ridiculous that is, because if you go to buy a house, which is arguably in par with the same significance in your financial life as paying for college is around $200K now on average, just like potentially buying a house, you know the sticker price of that house. You can say, I'm going to buy a $200,000 house. I'm going to put a down payment on it. I know what my mortgage interest rate payments are. You do not know that. The average student has actually no idea how much they will owe in loans to pay for their college.
How is that possible?
It's possible because of a few different reasons. One, colleges report the sticker price of their, you know, a year by year basis in a totally different way depending on the college that you go to. So you might get a financial aid award letter, and this will really happen in the spring. So happy to come back on and talk
about
this.
You'll come back on, but I want people to hear this. This is
important. When you get into a college, it's like, oh my gosh, this is amazing, fantastic. You get the acceptance letter, then later you get the financial aid award letter. And that's basically a breakdown of all the different costs associated, your scholarships, the grants you might have been awarded, and then the loans that you're also quote unquote awarded.
Wait, but a grant is free money.
Grant is free money. You do not have to pay that back.
And no taxation on that.
Yep.
Okay. So grant is free. Scholarship, is that interchangeable with grant?
Yes. However, scholarships and grants as well have the ability to be changed year over year. So you might get a grant or a scholarship your freshman year, but maybe didn't read the fine print, and maybe you're, depending on the type of scholarship, maybe your GPA goes down, or maybe you switch majors, you're not in the same college-specific program, or maybe your financial identity changes and you don't qualify for a Pell Grant anymore. So you really have to be on top of this every year and not assume that you'll get the same type of aid each year. So essentially what I'm trying to warn people about, and we see thousands of students deal with this, is the whole oh crap moment when you realize college is going to cost $10,000 more because you lost a scholarship.
There you are in your sophomore or junior year.
Yep.
You're established at the place. And now what usually will happen is you say, oh crap, and you just grab a loan. Because you're there.
A private loan, yes.
Right.
Usually a private loan, which has a much higher interest rate than a federal loan. And so students end up, that's really where you hear these horror stories of students getting themselves into $200,000 of debt, is because they might transfer colleges, they might lose a scholarship, and they're like, oh my goodness, I have 3 weeks to make tuition payments. where do I come up with this money? I don't have it in my bank account. My parents aren't helping me out. I have to take out a private loan.
And a private loan requires a co-signing, or it absolutely requires a co-sign? Yep.
I mean, there's like a few different banks where you might not necessarily, you could get around that. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, you need to have a co-signer.
So you get that letter that's like the grant, the award, the loan looks like a grant. People don't realize it's a loan.
So
that's confusing.
Yes, exactly. So basically what I'm trying to say is you get a different type of letter from every college that comes in a different format that uses different language, different terminology, and categorizes loans in a different way. So we see tons of students who text in their financial aid award letters, and they'll say things like, oh my goodness, I got $19,000 to go to this school. And we'll take a look at it. Our technology will scan it and look at it and actually piece together the information for them and say, no, you actually owe $19,000. The reason why you're confused is because it says federal unsubsidized loan, and it's categorized in your form as aid. So a lot of letters actually show total out-of-pocket cost, not total cost of loans, which means you have to also pay interest on that, which is not included generally in those papers either.
What is the movement afoot to create the standardization that is necessary in this process? Is there a movement?
I'd say there's a total lack of movement. We're at NextInvest really working to be kind of like the home for all of your student loan information. So on the back end of our technology, students will send us their financial aid letters. They'll text it to us over pictures. We take all that information and create internal profiles of students so that we can actually send you reminders that are customized, like, hey, FYI, you have a loan payment coming up, or did you actually understand your whole loan package? Like, let's come up with a student loan repayment plan. Are you building credit? Because that will help you refi your loans later on. So we're really trying to do that, to be honest.
But is this, I mean, under the previous administration with a Secretary of Education who might have been a little bit more into this idea,
yep,
is Betsy DeVos, has there been any conversation about it, or is it backburnered, or what's your feeling about that?
Yeah, so I'd say just with any kind of administration change, there's just a lot more confusion. I would say holistically is that people just don't know what the state, I mean, we just saw the change in DACA for DACA students. So there's a ton of uncertainty around the state of the FAFSA, the amount of money that will be associated with it later on and moving forward, how your loans will be serviced, what the role of the federal government in extending loans to students. So we're basically in a time of a lot of uncertainty.
I'll tell you one thing for certain. During this coming break, you should go to nextgenvest.com or just have your little college student-to-be text 646-798-1745. Text, I want help paying for college. You'll get connected with a money mentor, a human being, not a bot.
Yep, a trained human being. Yep.
I'd like one of those trained human beings. I think that
use mine.
Mark is a very good trained human being for me. He's Mark is my bot, yeah, essentially. But go do that, because this is so crazy. Okay, so when we come back, more of our conversation with Kelly Peeler, who I do want to talk about the future of the student loan market, because you always come here and scare the crap out of me about the student loan debt bubble, and we'll see if you're still feeling that way. You are listening to Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send an email, ask Jill at jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back with Kelly Peeler.
It's Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger. Have a question? Call or email anytime, 855-411-JILL, or ask Jill at jillonmoney.com.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, give us a holler, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, ask Jill at jillonmoney.com. We are delighted to have guest stars, Kelly Peeler and her son Otis. Her son Otis is a four-legged son. And Otis, you know we're talking about you. Is Otis shivering a tiny bit?
Otis is chilling. Yeah.
Is it? It's all right. Good. Otis is the mascot of Next Gen Vest. Next Gen Vest is an awesome organization that really helps students with the process of applying for college and getting financial aid. They just make it so much easier. Go to nextgenvest.com to learn more. Text 646-798-1745 if your student wants to get some help from a real human being. What do you want, Mark? Oh, Mark wants to know, where is our gear? There, I don't know if there's swag. Is there? Is there next-gen
yes,
vest
there
gear?
Yes, there is. I will bring you some swag the next time. We actually just redesigned our whole brand. So,
I noticed that. The website looking
thank
good.
You.
Very nice. Okay, before we went to the break, we were talking about, you know, student loans. This is so annoying. There's no standardization of forms that you receive from colleges.
Yep.
But also, another problem is that once kids graduate, and what is it, $1.4 trillion now outstanding?
Yes, $1.4 trillion.
Do you want to scare me right now and tell me about why that's going to blow up and cause the next financial crisis? I don't think it is, but I know you do.
I think it is, and we've gone over this before. I studied the history of financial crises during the 2008 crisis, so I'm kind of a huge
and she went to Harvard.
Nerd around the leading indicators of future financial crises, and that's why I started Next Gen Vest, is because I see the same three leading indicators for a major financial crisis that I see in the student loan market. And to just give a high-level quick overview, the leading indicators can be boiled down to, one, a mispricing of risk within a particular asset class. So you've probably seen, if you're listening to this, college tuition prices going up by 1,000% in the last 30 years. The college can cost up to $73,000 a year, which is NYU's sticker price, which is just
total
obscene.
Ripoff.
Number two is a lack of general transparency around any type of forms. So comparing this back to the housing crisis, people being surprised that adjustable rate mortgages shot their interest rates through the roof, I would compare that to what we were just talking about, the total lack of standardization of any type of financing form for colleges. And then the third is really a change in consumer identity. So right now, to go to college is part of the American dream. Every parent wants their kid to go to college, kind of regardless of the cost. And I compare that back to the housing crisis, where part of the American dream was tied to home ownership. And why that's really relevant is because it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. You don't actually do back of the envelope calculations of, like, does this make sense for our financial situation? A lot of times it does not. A lot of times students should go to community college. They should do online courses. They should take cheaper options. But because there's such, it's tied to the idea of success, across history, people have made totally illogical economic decisions.
But how does the bubble burst?
So if I had the answer for you, I'm
trying to think about it, though. Really, realistically, like, I could always figure how you can get a short squeeze or a liquidity crisis.
Yep.
But and you have a housing crisis, like too many people bought homes. There's a bubble. So the underlying asset drops in value.
Yeah. So, I mean, the more doom and gloom version of this.
Yeah, do it. Let's do it.
The more doom and gloom version of this, if you look across history, and I mean, like, long term history, the financial crises kind of hit peak moments of changing that happened to coincide with changing global empires as well. So the real doom and gloom moment that I would have is that we're actually seeing a decline of the broader U.S. economy that will have kind of a spark moment of in line with a financial crisis, in line with maybe a decline of our military presence, in line with squeezing of the middle class and unrest, which you're kind of seeing right now. So I kind of have a little bit of a bleak view of the future of really where I see the crash happening is the U.S. government, which holds $1.3 trillion of that debt, of that $1.4 trillion of student loan debt, really being on the hook and that being the not full backstop anymore.
Interesting. So is in the payment and servicing business of this $1.4 trillion, Right now, there's this big company called Navient.
Yep.
And they've gotten spanked by the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. They I love the best part of this is that, like, if you literally just showed up in court and said, do you have my papers? They couldn't produce the papers. Yeah. I mean, like, it was like you had a good shot, even if you were a deadbeat borrower, to show up and say, hey, my name is Jill. Hey, Navient, can you prove you hold my loan? And they couldn't. For a lot of people.
Yeah. The student loan servicing market is one that a lot of people don't, to be honest, know a ton about. It's even more confusing than we were talking before. Financial aid award letters out of a loan from a bank. And the way that it works is you take out a loan, whether it's from the federal government or from a university or from a bank itself, and then it's serviced. So meaning you send your payments to that company, they tell you what your interest rates are. They're kind of like the bookkeeper, if you want to, similar to a mortgage servicer. And what becomes really confusing is when you have multiple different servicers. So you have to log into a lot of different accounts. You have to send different information. And, oh, by the way, your loans can get shifted or bought by another servicer as well. So you have to essentially be the person who's advocating across your loan portfolio. And mind you, for NextInvest users, we're dealing with students who are doing this totally by themselves. So they have to, like, call multiple loan servicers to be like, wait a second, I think you got my interest payment wrong, when they themselves feel uncomfortable even understanding what loans mean and what they are and all that. So we really try to advocate on their behalf and make it clearer.
Okay, when we come back with Kelly Peeler, you're going to tell us how the loan servicing business needs to actually advance and what the next evolution should be.
Sure.
And then what the people who are juggling all these different loans and these different servicers need to do to grab hold of it. So stay tuned. We are here live with Kelly Peeler. Our phone number here, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. When we return, more of our interview with Kelly Peeler. We'll be right back.
K, IRAs, refinancing. She covers it all. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger. Broadway's
dark tonight. You're back with Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. There's nothing more mysterious than having to navigate the college financial aid process. And that's why we have a super expert here, Kelly Peeler. She is the founder and CEO of NextGenVest. She connects your students with real human beings who will help those students navigate the process. And one of the things that you've been really very outspoken about is not just the process of applying for financial aid and how there are problems with the lack of standardization, but also the problem that you have on the back end once you graduate with all these disparate loan servicing companies. So first of all, let me start by asking this for this segment. What should be happening in the loan processing and servicing business that would be consumer friendly?
I think having consistent forms. let me boil a lot of things. First of all, let's have consistent forms so that a student actually understands how much they owe, which the average student does not, which is incredibly alarming. Most students, if you ask them, they will say, oh, yeah, I think I kind of remember how much I owe. If you don't have a firm number and you haven't created a plan around that, you're in trouble. So that's number one. Number two is you need to actually understand what your loan breakdown means in terms of when you actually have to make interest payments. So a lot of times students will see things on their financial aid award letters that say unsubsidized loan versus subsidized loans. So this isn't, the whole loan thing isn't an after college thing. Sometimes you have to be making payments during college, which is really relevant because that means you have to get a part-time job or do work study or things like that. So that's really the second thing, is actually understanding your loan portfolio and what payments you need to make now. The third thing is actually understanding where your loans are held. And so where do you actually need to, like, literally send the check to make your payments? And I say check because you know, we're living in 2017, and yet a lot of students have to send literal checks in the mail to
Why?
Their loan servicers because the technology is totally outdated.
Oh my gosh, what a pain in the neck.
And that's how, quite honestly, a lot of money gets quote unquote lost is because it's sent and it's lost in the mailroom, which is, sounds ridiculous, but we see tons of stories of students telling us this type of stuff over text message. And so to answer your question, a lot of the whole process should really be revamped so that it's brought into, honestly, the 21st century.
And if you have all these different loan servicing companies, is there a way, if you consolidate, that's one way to do it, but that may actually jack your interest rate up, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's sort of the idea of a monopoly, right? So if you have one student loan servicer, then they can do things like increase your interest rates potentially, or the fees associated with, you know, like managing and servicing your loans. They can totally dictate how they communicate all of the changes to you, and they can do, they can potentially do some shady stuff. So recently, the CFPB last year hit a lot of student loan servicers with fraud charges in a massive class action suit. And I only bring that up as relevant because if you're consolidating that into one, that just increases the potential risk.
So what how would you like the loan servicing business to exist? Should there be fewer companies, more competition? Should it be a public-private partnership? How should it go down?
Where I sit in this broader landscape is really defending our end user, which is a student. So really trying to be the advocate of whatever is best for a student who actually has to pay off these loans. And so my answer to that question is you should give students, the people who are responsible for paying them off, a choice. And so whether that's multiple, whether that's one, you know, like having an actual choice like you would in any market is where we kind of stand.
And before we get to the break, there are a lot of different companies that are in the loan or trying to break into the private loan business.
Yep.
Some of them were, you know, they may have come from online platforms, some from standard banks. Is that a good or a bad thing to have the private market involved in what is dominated now by the federal government?
In my view, good. Because you have, and the sole reason is because you have lower default rates. So if you take out a private student loan, meaning from a bank, as opposed to a federal loan, meaning from the federal government, you actually need to do credit underwriting. So you need to have a credit score. You need to have a cosigner. That means that there's credit risk associated with that loan that has been understood and processed. And you don't have to do that for the federal government, which basically means a lot of people are taking out way too much in loans and is actually relevant for their credit, their family's credit profile.
And also, as everyone's taking out loans, you know, from the certified financial planner point of view, we're also putting families at risk because all these loans are coming due. And now, you know, we get reports all the time from the New York Federal Reserve, which is saying, hey, the fastest growing segment of borrowers
yes.
for education debt is now over 60.
Yes.
Like that's what's happening. Like grandparents are taking on loans.
Right.
Parents are taking on loans. They're blowing up their own retirement plans.
Yeah.
This is really
stuff. And the kicker to that is you can't default on them. You can defer your payments, meaning you just don't pay, but you can't, like, those will follow you till you die.
Even if you declare bankruptcy.
Right.
We're talking to Kelly Peeler. It is the Jill on Money show. We're letting Kelly stay for the last segment because in honor of Otis. It's the Otis segment, the little baby segment. Mark, you're going to have to figure out how to get a nice picture of Otis in the show notes because Otis is the star. Kelly's the star. Otis is the co-star. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email. Ask Jill at jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back. You're back with Jill on Money, and it's time for the final segment with Kelly Peeler. She is the founder and CEO of Next Gen Vest, which is an awesome service. Makes the process of applying for college and getting aid much easier. And before we go, Kelly, now that we have figured out how to change the entire lending process for student loans, how to fix the servicing, and before we leave, and don't worry too much about the leading indicators of the financial crisis, which we're just going to bury that in like the second or third segment. Don't worry about that. But if you missed any part of this interview, it behooves you, if you have a student who will be attending college or you have a student in college, just go to JillOnMoney.com. At the top, just click on the YouTube link. You can listen to the whole show. It's amazing. Kelly is terrific. So, Kelly, big things to take away right before the end of the program. October 1st
is when the FAFSA comes out.
Fill out that gosh darn FAFSA, ladies and gentlemen, because you're leaving $2.7 billion of free money on the table.
Yep.
Next thing. What else do I want to know?
That we're here to help you 24/7 over text message. So if anyone is listening, you can go to nextgeninvest.com and sign up to get personalized, a real human helping you over text message on nights and weekends 24/7. They're powered by our technology. So you're talking to a real human, but you'll get customized reminders in the future to really keep you on track. Anything from helping you fill out the FAFSA, finding scholarships, to coming up with a student loan repayment plan. They're kind of like your personal financial assistant.
I love that. 646-798-1745. If you're in your car, take that number down. And Kelly, as we look forward to the academic season, I know we'll have you back on when we get those horrible letters that are not standardized, that outline all of the awards, etc. But be careful, gang. Kelly has got a fantastic service, but if you're not using it, you could really buy yourself a ton of problems in the college aid process. Kelly Peeler, founder and CEO of NextGenVest, and her son, Otis, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And thanks for listening. We always love hearing from you. Give us a holler, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you for listening.